Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the online course for the NASM CPT exam. My name is Eddie Lester and we are here today to go over the PowerPoint lecture for chapter 16. So yeah, we're on the last chapter, guys. Congrats on making it this far. Let's go ahead and talk about specifically behavioral change strategies. And really what this chapter is about is assisting your clients with creating new behaviors that are more in line with their fitness goals. So not only with your clients do they need to show up and put in the work in the gym, but their behaviors outside of the gym really affect their ability to achieve their goals. Things like nutrition, things like sleep, things like exercising on their own. So yeah, let's go ahead and talk about ways that you can do that, as well as point out what's most important in this chapter. So looking over to slide number two, the stages of change model. NASM's gonna bring up the stages of change model because this is their suggestion for how a behavior is created. And it's also called the trans-theoretical model. So they may use either of those words on the test, either stages of change model or trans-theoretical model. But basically, to read that on the top slide too, the TTM states that individuals progress through a series of stages of behavior change. And that movement through these stages is cyclical, not linear. Meaning that, if they don't succeed in their efforts, they basically go back to the beginning. So it's more cycle-wise, like the cumulative injury cycle, than it is just like along a linear path. The more they can regress, they can go in all different directions at once. So, but let's go ahead and go over the stages because that's what's most important to the test, as well as understanding with your clients how to potentially create change in behavior. But the stages in order are going to be start with pre-contemplation, then contemplation, then preparation, then action, and then maintenance. And those five are the main ones that NASM's ever going to ask you on the test. They did include termination in this edition, but let's go ahead and go over those again a little bit more specifically, starting with number one, which is pre-contemplation. So pre-contemplation, it says individuals do not intend to change their behaviors in the foreseeable future or don't even know that they have a behavior that needs changing. This is someone that's not even thinking about anything to do with exercise. And yeah, I'm going to relate these to an exercise goal, like someone that wants to get in shape. And pre-contemplation, they don't even have any interest in getting in shape. They don't even think they're out of shape, that sort of thing. And you may be finding people in all different phases, but the pre-contemplation phase, you typically don't see too many people in the gym in the pre-contemplation phase, because typically the contemplation and preparation is when they more start to get into the gym and or action, that sort of thing. And obviously maintenance too, but pre-contemplation, they have no interest in anything to do with health and fitness because they haven't even thought about being out of shape. All right, non-exercises, that's the one, but specifically pre-contemplation, they don't see or want to change any behaviors for the next 6 months. Okay. This is before they've thought about, but specifically know that timeline. They don't plan on changing anything for 6 months. Then contemplation is going to be contemplating making a change. They recognize that they don't, or that they have a bad behavior, or they want to start exercising. They want to get in shape. Maybe they realize they look in the mirror and they aren't happy. So the contemplating, they plan on making a change within the next 6 months. Okay. That's the specific timeline is what you need to know. Three, preparation. This is the third stage and it's after contemplation. So the third stage of the stages of change model is preparation. That's important. Know that, and it's after contemplation. And preparation is individuals intend to take action and make a change in their behavior within the next month. So within 1 month, I'm going to make that step into starting a fitness program. I'm going to work with a personal trainer, that sort of thing. Fourth is action. Action is when they have started the new behavior, but they have not been doing it for 6 months straight, meaning that they've started it and they may be continuing to stick with that behavior, but they haven't committed to it for a long period of time. Okay, that 6 months is important, meaning they haven't done it for 6 months, but they started. Maintenance is going to be they've done it for 6 months and further on out, therefore it has become a pretty normal and regular behavior. Okay, so that's going to be important to know the timelines associated with those, as well as the names and the order that they're in, those five specifically. And then NASM also goes over the termination stage. Sorry, as we moved into slide three on the back half of those, but termination is going to be when they basically individuals have zero temptation to engage in the old behavior and exhibit 100% self-efficacy in all previously tempting situations, meaning that their behavior has changed. And they no longer consider themselves in the stages of change because that behavior is just normal to them. So it's important, it says at the bottom, matching strategies to an individual's stage of change is a strategy trainers should use to improve adherence and reduce failure rate, we'll call it. Meaning that, yeah, just basically where is someone in this in these stages of change and how can you get them towards that maintenance? That's the goal of the personal trainer. So moving over to slide number 4, it says influences on behavior. So this is just going to be kind of for your information, more stuff. In the sense that, you know, how can they influence behavior? How can you influence behavior? Confidence is the first one. It says performance accomplishments, meaning, you know, what have you completed in the past that you should be proud of that you can use to motivate yourself to continue with new behaviors. Modeling and watching others can help build confidence. Verbal persuasion from friends, from family members, from trainers. Using good imagery, like seeing yourself waking up and going to the gym the next morning, or and then also positive self-talk should be like, I know I can do this. More the talk that, you know, you pump yourself up with before a workout or something like that. So, also interpersonal influences, groups, friends, family, people that you're in regular contact with that can, you can let them know about the behavior change that you're attempting to make, and they can assist you with that. And then effective influences that are resulting from emotions. Meaning like you recognize that you look in the mirror and you are sad, that affects you, and basically that being affected by that, we'll say, makes you want to make a change. So looking in the mirror and not being happy, that's an emotion that would affect you in that sense. Then you have sensation influences, so physical feelings. So something like, I went to the gym and I feel really good afterwards. That feeling is what I want and what I'm going to use to motivate myself to continue exercising. And I have a lot of clients that love that after workout feeling, and they feel really good about themselves after they've worked out. So that's definitely an important one. And just to read that, it says physical feelings, one experiences relating to behaviors involved in establishing a healthy lifestyle. And that's literally you feel better, you physically feel better, you may sleep better. Those sensation influences are important as well. All right, so further, as we move on to slide number 5, influences, modification, approaches on behavior. So positive reinforcement, this is, you know, offering rewards designed to encourage repetition of the behavior. Positive reinforcement with my clients, I typically do something like, once you achieve the first part of your goal, which might be like a 10-pound weight loss, I want you to go buy something that's going to further encourage your exercising. Not like, oh, reward yourself with a cheat meal. No, never do that because that's counterproductive towards your goals. I would reward them or suggest that they reward themselves with like a pair of shoes, gym shoes specifically, or a new workout outfit, things like that. You know, clothes, if you look good going to the gym and you feel good going to the gym, you're going to be more inclined to go to the gym. So that's one way you can use positive reinforcement. Journaling. Journaling is going to be important. And what I use journaling with is I have people write down basically their nutrition log. It's a type of self-monitoring. And self-monitoring does come up on the test, so I definitely want you to understand what that is and what types or what things you can do for self-monitoring. But yeah, writing things down, like writing down what you ate all day and sending it to your trainer at the end of the day is going to be a type of self-monitoring. Also, it's a practical way to collect information about behavior patterns. So yeah, like you wrote down about your behavior of not making it to the gym. Why did you not make it to the gym and how can you fix that? That's another form of self-monitoring in journaling. And then it also can be used to identify cues and barriers to exercise and nutrition plans. If you're writing down every day that, oh, I was too tired to wake up to go to the gym, maybe getting to bed an hour earlier can fix that. So determining what barriers may be there that you can overcome or help your client overcome the negative behavior, we'll say. All right, as we move to slide 6, it says further influences and modification approaches on behavior. Prompting, so encouragement, persuasion, reminding, this is you as the trainer can do this. This is they can do that for themselves. Set alarms, set positive affirmation texts, or I think you could sign up for something that says like you are special today, and get a text that, or like a meme sent to you that actually encourages you to continue doing what you're doing, or follow, we'll say, motivating social media accounts that help people with that. Or if you, as a trainer, you can assist clients by texting them once a day and say, hey, great work yesterday. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. Good work bringing your A game, something like that. All right, then contracting. So agreements that specify expectations. This gets a little bit more for the type A personality that says, you know, almost like they need something so specific that they have to do that it will help them. But it doesn't work with everyone, but contracting is basically creating a contract with someone that says you need to hit X amount of goals, but how are you going to do it? Meaning you need to get to the gym 3 times a week. You need to eat these, we'll say, types of foods, or eat well for this amount of time, and blah, blah, blah. And also lays out their responsibilities and their contingencies on the behavior change. So contracting, I haven't done it really before, but you can use that with a special type of client, or with a certain type of client, I should say. Charting attendance and participation, gold stars like you used to get in school or something, but also making sure that, you know, hey, you show up all the time, you're going to get a benefit from this program. So making sure that they know, hey, you missed this workout, something bad should happen. You owe me 20 burpees. I don't know. providing feedback on progress. So always remember reassessing. That's great for personal trainers. And providing, you know, like actually just this morning, I was with a client and we over the weekend, on Friday, I measure his stomach skin fold. And then on Monday, I measure his stomach skin fold just to show him how bad he does over the weekend, and how much that, like, his body fat potentially increases from the bad food he eats over the weekend. Today, he actually went down one over the weekend. So I asked him, what did you do this weekend that led to you potentially losing a little bit of body fat over the weekend, over 3 days? And he said he ate well, he didn't have too many cocktails, and he made his own food. Even though he had social events, he still ate a lot of his own food before the social events, so he wouldn't cheat as bad. So that was creating a behavior in him that it was a direct feedback on, you know, here's what your Friday looked like, we did good, but here's what your Monday typically looks like, which is bad. But this week it happened to be good. So like, and then I wanted to reinforce that behavior, so I asked him about it. How can you do that in the future? And that's going to lead to his further success. So providing feedback on, you know, this is where you're at and this is what happened over the weekend, it can be great. And I actually always have my clients jump on the scale almost every single time, because I want to see if they go up 2 pounds, there's a reason they went up 2 pounds. If they go up 3 pounds, there's a reason they went up 3 pounds. I've had a client come back from a weekend of complete debauchery food and fun wise, and they gained 10 whole pounds in a whole weekend. So that's my way of making sure that they know what behaviors lead to what results. And when they do perfect and they lose 10 pounds in 2 weeks because they did everything perfectly, I want to make sure that they know the exact result of their good behavior, and vice versa. All right, so coaching and communicating. Motivational interviewing, this is a tip that NASM recommends. So it can help clients realize the gap between their values and problematic behavior. So this is really just asking your client a lot of questions about their situation and what has led them to be out of shape and how they believe they can get back into shape, and then guiding them along that process. So expressing empathy through that whole situation, in the sense of relating it to potential previous clients or to yourself, of the struggles of eating well or the struggles of getting to the gym or the struggles of not having enough time, whatever it is that they may be struggling with, you can basically continually ask them questions until they determine a correction or until they can determine a solution, there you go, to their issue or their bad behavior issue. That also strengthens that motivation for change. So you as the trainer are the most powerful motivational tool that they have, and that's why they're with you. Some people just go to the personal trainers for that motivation outside of, not even, they already may know how to work out plenty or well, but they still go to trainers for that extra motivation. So with verbal communication, just be clear, be direct, and consistent with what you're telling them. Also, you know, if you believe that something is a very specific way to get them in the best shape, stick with that. Don't flip flop on them. Don't be kind of loosey goosey. I guess that's the wrong word, but don't be don't send them mixed signals as far as like, oh, well, you can eat red meat or you can't eat red meat, or you can eat fat or you can't eat fat, or you can be vegan, but you don't have to be, I don't know. Whatever your line of approach to getting a client in shape, be direct, be clear and consistent with that message to make sure that they don't misunderstand or believe that it may not be the best way for them. Okay. Let's go ahead and move over to slide number 8. Further coaching and communication, active listening, guys. That's something that NASM loves to ask about, because active listening is a great way to prove to your clients that you're understanding what they're saying, basically. So you're, it's basically a form of providing appropriate feedback, paying attention to the clients in total communication. And then the main thing is, we'll actually get through it right here as we keep reading, but attending to the main support ideas. And then the listener, this is what active listening is. It's when the listener provides feedback to the speaker by paraphrasing what the speaker had just said. So if somebody comes up to me and says this long story about how their bad behavior led to them gaining weight, but how they had no control over the situation, my active listening would be to basically re-say and paraphrase their story to confirm that was what in fact what they had intended. So you're saying that the going to your brother's wedding, I mean, obviously, going to your brother's wedding and eating the ice cream and all the, or hitting up the dessert bar was what led to this weight gain. That's a small paraphrase of a situation that might happen, something like that. Then they said, yeah, that's, I mean, I definitely hit the dessert bar too hard. and then after you paraphrase that, you can then give them a tip on how to avoid that. But they know what you said, or they know that you know what they said, if that made sense, so that they can be confident that they're being heard. That's the main thing. But it lets the clients know that they're listening and that they, or that you are listening and that you care, more or less. So. And avoid using too many yes or no questions. Always ask open-ended questions. If you haven't heard what an open-ended question is, it's basically that question that can't be answered with yes or no. It requires explanation. It's a what, why, how. Why did you eat all the desserts at the dessert bar? Okay, well, I was hungry. Okay, typically it's not a simple answer, but it requires thought and it requires them to come up with a longer explanation. All right, so moving over to slide number 9, addressing thoughts and behaviors. Association dissociation. So association focuses on internal body feedback and how the muscles feel. And then dissociation focuses on the external environment. So these are ways that you can assist the client understanding a little bit more about fitness, a little bit more about what they're doing, and also motivate them a little bit further. So association, basically, you know, the burn from that muscle in that set is representative of the muscle doing work, which is good toward, or, you know, great for achieving your goals. So you're associating the muscle burn with achieving their goals. That is an association. A dissociation allows them to almost, dissociate or not worry about how they're feeling and just getting through the workout by distracting them, almost like listening to music or having conversation while they work out, something like that. Kind of gets them distracted from what they're doing, but they're still achieving their goals. Depending on the client, you may need to explain one or the other. All right, so next we have different types of support systems, or just basically support. And I want to go over these because NASM does like to bring these up in one way or another, sometimes on the test. And the first one we're going to be going over is instrumental support. So instrumental support is going to be typically what they actually do ask about on the test, but it's to be a good listener, communicate the fitness info effectively. But one of the examples that they give is spotting a client. You are instrumental in making, or in supporting that client, meaning you're there, you're spotting them, and you're talking to them, and you're listening to them. That's being there to get them through the workout. That the personal trainer is typically providing instrumental support. Emotional support, you can provide this, but being empathetic and providing comfort and caring for issues that are coming up emotionally for them. With extreme weight loss clients, they may have had issues growing up and being overweight. So what is the emotions that come out around getting into the gym? Are they feeling judged? Does that make them happy? Does that make them sad? Does that make them nervous? You know, what are they feeling, and how can you empathize with them to get them to work out and get through those emotions that are preventing them from working out? Personal assistance support. Basically, this is something that can get your client to the gym if they are having issues getting to the gym. So it's basically provide services of help. Like a personal assistant would. So help the client arrange a daycare support for the children with it if the gym is going to offer that sort of thing. So one of the gyms I go to has a daycare that is providing personal assistance support to their members so that they can get to the gym and achieve their fitness goals. It's a good way for parents to be brought into a gym situation without having to worry about their kids. So if you're planning on owning a family gym or you work at a family gym, that might be something very beneficial. All right, task appreciation support. So acknowledge the efforts and express appreciation for the work that has been done. So always be their cheerleader, no matter what. And that's something that's kind of important. Obviously not overboard, but you know, like, hey, that was a great workout, great set. You kick some butt today. Whatever you know gets them excited to and makes them feel good about what they just achieved. And even my simplest things is, hey, you were only able to do 10 reps of 135 bench press when we first started working together. Now, you know, 2 weeks later, you're already doing, you know, 15 reps at that same weight. Great work. Something like that. So that they completed the task, they were better at it, and I supported that and made sure that they knew that what they had gone through. All right, so furthermore, we're getting to slide number 11, social support continued. Self-monitoring, I brought this up already, but self-monitoring, they do like to ask about this. It's the ability to recognize and regulate one's behavior by providing accountability. So self-monitoring is you know, they have apps for this. That's one of the most, writing down a workout, like in an app or completing it in an app, that sort of thing is going to be one of the ways of self-monitoring. And Nazem loves to ask about self-monitoring. It's basically you journaling, you writing it down, you tracking your progress in an app, your nutrition, your workouts, your sleep, you know, your steps, like a activity tracker in steps, things like that, calorie burner, heart rate monitoring, or heart rate monitor. That's all self-monitoring and providing data for or writing down what you did and using that to motivate you. It's great. Adherence is next. Family and friends have a strong influence on adherence, so you always want to tell your family and friends that you want to tell your clients that they are going to want to tell their family and friends because they are going to help them achieve a result. I have a lot of clients that don't tell anyone that they're working with a trainer and they're trying to lose weight, maybe because they're embarrassed or whatnot, but then they go out with their friends and their friends are like, oh, we're going to, you know, a taco stand at midnight after having a few drinks at the bar. And that's not going to be very good social support from their friends, but if their friends don't know, they can't support you in your goal towards living a healthier lifestyle. So that's just an example. Discuss social support with your clients to reinforce the adherence, meaning your family, your friends. If they know about it, then you will, or they will be better for it because then they can get more support. All right. Cognitive restructuring, process of learning to identify and dispute irrational and bad thoughts. More or less, just people can sometimes have negative self-talk or negative thoughts in their mind. Just learning how to deal with those and turn them into positive things can be beneficial too. All right, coping strategies on as we move to slide 12. So basically, the problem-focused coping targets an issue that causing stress to reduce the effects of stress. As opposed to focusing on the problem, really focus on potentially the solution. That can be a good way to do that. Emotion-focused coping, this distracts them from the negative feelings associated with stress. With me, I want my clients to feel the stress, and I want them to feel the emotions that the stress are bringing up so they can potentially get those out, because bottling up emotions can be kind of tough around achieving a fitness goal because, you know, that's kind of maybe weighing on their conscious, things like that. And you know, getting it out in whatever way it be, may be, if it's anger around their because they're overweight or something, maybe we'll do boxing that helps them punch, and I want them to get let those emotions come out when they're swinging those punches. Really fun to do that, especially like if they have a lot of stress or they come after a stressful day from their boss or something, and they get in the gym and they just start beating up a boxing bag or you play with the mitts in boxing. That's a great way to have emotion-focused coping with anger specifically. Others, you may not be able to hit up or work with them too much, like sadness, but other types of emotions. But, you know, just asking them about how they're feeling, you know, and that sort of thing can be beneficial for sure. Intrinsic approach is an inside-out approach. It focuses on enjoyment and fun of exercise, makes someone look forward to working out, not just the means of goal accomplishment, but yeah, the intrinsic approach is also another way that you can really bring them to focus on their own joy with what they're doing and or the goal that they're achieving. All right, coping strategies continued as we get to slide number 13. Asking questions, guys. Remember, you are question askers. You are constantly going to be talking with your clients, and you need to be asking them questions all the time. Most clients don't come to you for you to tell them about your day. That's what I'll say. So, you know, ask them about their day. What's going on? How was their night? How was the baseball game they went to the night before? How was the how's their family? How's their friends? Tell me about work. Anything. Ask them tons of questions. Avoid the closed-ended questions of yes or no, because you want to stimulate conversation. And then also for sales, you know, it's good to ask these types of questions. An example is, can you explain how your life would be different if you lost 20 pounds before your wedding? That's a very specific question that gets them thinking about achieving their goal. And in our business and sales course, we offer a ton of power questions like that to promote the closure of sales and getting more clients, which you can check out right at the continuing education button above. Don't ask closed-ended questions or less of those. Can you feel your back muscles contracting during pull-ups? That's a closed-ended question. Yes, you can ask that, but if you're trying to stimulate conversation and get them to enjoy working with you, sometimes those open-ended questions are better, depending on the client. All right, moving to goal setting, slide 14. Goals should provide direction and enhance motivation and be consistent with one's own ideals and ambitions. Okay, that's important. The goal should be consistent with one's ideals and ambitions. Now, some loves to ask about goals and what this should be aligned with, and it's always with the client. The goals should be aligned with what the client wants. What are their ideals? What are their ambitions? What do they want to achieve? That's where the goal setting comes from. Or where the goal comes from. So types of goals, you have objective goals, something that an individual is trying to accomplish, like more or less a fat loss goal or a specific lose 10 pounds, that sort of thing. Subjective goals is based on experience or expectation, less tangible. Subjective would be something like, so it's based on experience or expectation. So, will my boyfriend coming from, will my ex-boyfriend coming home for the summer, if I want to make him jealous, will that make him jealous? And that, how's that experience? Something like that. More of a, you can't really measure that sort of goal, but you can be feeling it and kind of have that sort of ideal, if that made sense. And then an outcome goal, usually about winning or losing. Something like competitive weight loss challenges, things like that can be good in an exercise setting. And it is the end result of some behavior. Focusing on, you know, the outcome of what all this work will get them towards. That's an outcome goal. Performance goal specifies that the end product or performance will be increased potentially. A performance goal can be something like, I want to sprint better in my 100-yard dash in high school or in college. That's a performance goal, and that is directly measurable. So it's like a vertical box jump or a sprint or a time on a T-test, things like that. Process goal is also going to be, it specifies the process you want to perform to achieve a goal. This is like breaking down your long-term goal into short-term and really short-term goals, like daily things like that. It's a process. All right, now getting to something a little bit more important that might make it on the test. Slide number 15, it says SMART goals, which simplifies the goal-setting process. You guys do need to know this: specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. Specific refers to being as specific as possible. I want to lose 10 pounds, okay, boom, of fat. Well, even more specific, I want to lose 10 pounds of fat. Measurable, how are you going to measure that 10 pounds of fat? Well, through body composition assessments. Attainable, it needs to be something that you believe is challenging, but not too hard. Meaning like, I want to lose 1 pound, okay, that's not too challenging. But I want to lose 30 pounds in a month, that's a lot more challenging. And realistic is going to be challenging, but not too hard, even further, in the sense that realistic means, do you believe that you can do it? The attainable and realistic kind of sound similar, but attainable is more like, is it physically going to be possible? But realistic is, does the person believe that they can achieve it? That's the difference between those two. And then timely, it needs to have a timeline on it, meaning like, I want to lose 10 pounds of fat in 1 month. Or 4 weeks, something like that, the time. All right, moving over to slide number 16, goal setting, goal proximity, relative nearness of a goal in terms of time frame. You don't want to pick something too far out. You know, if they have a 100-pound weight loss goal, focus on the first 2 months and getting them down 15 to 20 pounds, something like that. Short-term goals, goals that are set to be achieved in the near future, typically a matter of weeks, maybe 2 weeks, 4 weeks sort of thing. That's some most of the time a short-term goal. Long-term goals are those ones that are a lot further out. You know, 1 year, 12 months, 6 months, 8 months, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, that sort of thing. All right, furthermore, slide number 17, progress evaluation. So progress reviews, you need to celebrate success. So when you are reviewing them and reassessing them, what did they get better at? Are they closer to their goal? Celebrate that. This is also the positive reinforcement. Buy some shoes that more positively encourage you to get into the gym. Progress reviews also, it helps identify factors that have helped or hindered. You can directly say like, oh, well, your ability to get to the gym 4 times a week has really allowed us to be more successful. Or the exact opposite. Oh, you only being to meet with me once a week is hindering your goal progress. Okay. Also assist clients in understanding what makes them successful. Some of my clients are most successful when they have a significant other. Some is the exact opposite. You know, some people are more motivated when they're single, but you know, what makes them successful? Try to point it out. Yeah, lots of examples potentially there, so but I'll stick with that. Record keeping. So this is kind of the end of your just some basic tips for as a personal trainer what you need to be doing. It's important for business and program design. You need to have goals set for each session. This is basically you tracking your paperwork, and then after each session, take notes on how the client felt. A lot of the times after a set, I'll write down, you know, a lot of fatigue at 8, broke form at 9. We were trying to get 10, things like that. Repetitions. So what was discussed, the new aches and pains and any homework assignments, activities performed, and the result of all of that. And then also have a folder for each client, whether it be electronic or physical. A lot of times people do like to see you with a notebook or with a folder file as you go into to train that client because it's all right there. You don't have to pull it up on your phone and look like you might be texting, something like that. But it depends on the client, depends on the atmosphere that you're working in. If it's more conducive to that manila folder or something, bring that around. If it's more conducive to an electronic iPad or something like that, that can be good too. But just make sure you don't look unprofessional because you're hunched over looking at your phone or iPad too long. All right. And then progress evaluation, business records to keep. You have number of days worked. This is for you personally. The average income per hour, number of days off, client hours that are canceled and or rescheduled, and proof of that cancellation, more or less, percentage of cancellations that were paid, meaning like, was it, if you have a 24-hour cancellation time, if they cancel 2 hours before, they typically have to pay for that session. The miles driven, okay, the amount or the cost of all those miles, the average number of sessions, and the average time spent in the gym per month not getting paid. All of that leads you to determine your worth. And a lot of times with a lot of types of courses will teach you to find out your current worth and then teach you how to increase that current worth by either working less days or working less hours. Like the 4-hour work week is basically describes how you can outsource things and live in a cheaper city so that if you can literally work 4 hours a week and have the rest free time and still make a good living. Kind of, yeah, the 4-hour work week by Tim Ferriss is pretty cool if you want to learn more about that. But yeah, there's lots of different self-help books on how to be more successful. And we have an entire course and book written for you on that. It's called Business and Sales, The Guide to Success as a Personal Trainer is the course and the name of the book. You can purchase it off Amazon or take our course for more CEUs. But yeah, remember guys, the most important thing out of all of this that we've gone over is making sure that you are successful as a personal trainer. You know, you can write up a fitness program pretty easily. You could pull a fitness program off the internet for free. Most people can. But how can you be successful as a personal trainer? That's the most important thing. That's where all of your money is going to be made. And if you can't make money as a personal trainer, you are not a personal trainer. Well, I mean, you kind of know what I mean there. You need to be focusing on the business development side as well as understanding all the other aspects of, you know, encouraging people's positive goals and behaviors and creating good programs and understanding the OPT model to create those programs and getting new clients. All that stuff is important, but the most important thing is making sure you have enough clients to make a good living as a personal trainer. Because all you guys are here for, you enjoy it, you love it, you love helping people, and you, that should be as easy as possible with all the clients that you possibly need in that sense. So definitely check out our course. Also, yeah, check out maybe Tim Ferriss's book, 4-Hour Workweek. Lots of different books out there. So yeah, even shoot me a recommendation if you have a good one too. Eddie@fitnessmentors.com is my email. And all right, guys, you made it through all the PowerPoints. Now let's go ahead and move on down to the audiobook lecture for this chapter, as well as the assignment and taking the quiz all the way down below. All right, guys, great work. I will see you right down below at the audiobook lecture. Cheers.